Is conflict destroying relationships in your community? Are offenses creating division? Feeling at a loss as a leader? What if I told you there is a way to grow through conflict rather than be destroyed by it? Conflict is inevitable whenever humans are in communion together. However, it can be an opportunity for growth rather than a cause for division. While it's not easy, by following God's principles, it is possible to find a way through conflict and experience God's blessings.
Hello, and thanks for joining She Leads by Faith podcast. We are the homeschool community builders. I'm Pam Kafer, along with Molly Kitzmiller and Hannah Larson, and we are here helping homeschool leaders grow lasting community built on Christ, connection, and strong leadership.
Are you or your kids feeling isolated and discouraged, even though you're in a homeschool group or co-op? Or are you homeschooling by yourself and desire a like-minded Christian community? Is the Holy Spirit prompting you to build an authentic community for your family? There are families waiting for you to answer the call. We know that the thought of starting your own group that truly meets your needs can be overwhelming. You are not alone. We are here to come alongside you.
We are three homeschool moms and co-op leaders with over 30 years of experience between us, leading thriving homeschool groups. We have answered the call to obediently step out in faith and trust God's plan. We have learned many lessons along the way, and we want to help you have a smooth journey so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If you're ready for lasting community built on Christ, connection, and servant leadership, this podcast is for you. Pop in your earbuds, keep your notebook handy, and be encouraged. You can do this. We are here for you.
Hello, friends. Thanks for joining us on part three of our series about handling conflict. Dun, dun, dun. In part one, we discussed five reasons that you need a conflict policy, and you do need one. You may not think you do, but you do. And in part two, we started reading an example conflict policy and talked about steps to take when you have been hurt or offended. So if you have not listened, go back and listen to those previous episodes to get caught up, because today we're going to wrap it up by talking about what you should do if you have offended another person. So if someone comes to you with an offense you have committed towards them, these are the steps that you're going to take. So Molly, you want to start us off on the next five? There's five steps that you can take when somebody has come to you and told you that you have offended them.
So the first step when someone comes to you and says to you, you have offended me, or why did you do this, is to listen and not defend yourself immediately. Take time to respond. This is so important because I think we all have the tendency to want to defend ourselves when somebody accuses us of something, right? Biggest thing that you can do is take a step back and breathe and go, okay, somebody said this to me. I really need to not react and defend, but I need to listen. Simple, but not easy to do.
Yeah, I have a great example of this. I had a parent come up to me. She did not like one of the policies that we had put into place. And she was telling me that she wanted to change it. And I was curious. So that's one of the things that I try to do when somebody is coming to me, is to try not to get defensive, but just get curious. And so as I was listening to her, I was asking her some questions. I wasn't able to tell her if we could change the policy at that time until I had talked to the board. And I told her that. She then proceeded to start telling me all of these other things that were she didn't agree with and she was not happy with. And I could feel myself starting to get defensive. And I was trying to stand there and listen and process in front of her. And I could tell that I wasn't saying anything because I wanted to make sure I didn't respond out of defense.
React, you mean?
React, yeah. Yeah. So then I just told her, I said, if my face is doing something right now, it's because I'm trying to process what you're saying. So I might need a little bit of time in order to do that.
Which is step two, Pam. That's a great, you might not have even known that, but step two is consider asking the person for time to respond. Yes. So
Look
you can
at me.
Look at you.
Look at me doing the right thing with the conflict policy. Yeah. Consider asking the person for time to respond so you can think through your response. That's exactly I felt. So our emotions can cause us to have reactions. So when you recognize your emotion is your, it's like your good little lie detector, right? Because something happened inside of my heart, in my stomach, in my chest that started not feeling good. It started going into knots. And that was my clue. Like, wait a second, I'm being offended here. So I need to understand more. I need more information to understand where she's coming from. So I can sort out, is this my stuff? Am I doing something wrong here? Are we as our co-op doing something wrong here? Or is this her stuff? Is this something that is coming up inside of her because of past hurts on her end? And but it takes time and communication to be able to do that. So yeah, that's what I did. I asked for time and it was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think that when somebody has been hurt or has a problem, they often don't come to the person in leadership with a great attitude. And so they may come sort of attacking. And to be on the receiving end of that is difficult, but it's our job as leaders to just sort of close your mouth, take a deep breath, ask for time, and realize that that attacking kind of behavior probably comes from a hurt somewhere, seeking to understand before reacting or before defending is number one step to do.
I would also make sure that you are in the right place to be able to receive that information. So if you're not, often with my kids, if they're hungry or they're tired or that is not the time to come to them because they're under-resourced. So, you know, it would be a good thing to ask for time if you are under-resourced. You know, community day might not be the best day to receive criticism or constructive criticism from someone.
Mm-hmm.
So ask for that. Say, well, I hear that you have something to share. I'm not in the best place to receive it. Can we schedule a time to get together this week or whatever that looks like?
Yeah.
I think it's really important.
That's a great response. You're not cutting them off and defending. You're just asking for time to be able to take that in a loving way, right?
Right.
And actually listen.
It does seem like when you're a leader, many times you will get bombarded one thing after another. And so when that happens, that's a really good strategy to take. And I have done that before. And I've told them, I really want to hear your heart about this, but right now I just need 24 hours or 2 days or whatever, mm-hmm. because I have like some other stuff going on too, so that they understand that you really, and if you take that stance of just trying to be curious and recognizing, I think it's really wise to do that step two and ask for that time.
I think sometimes when someone comes to us with an offense, our gut reaction is to be defensive, but maybe it's more from a place of being surprised, right? Or caught off guard. And
yeah.
So, again, taking some time, but explaining, not just, you know, pushing them off and saying, I don't have time for this right now, but explaining what your needs are, and that if you can have those needs met, then you will be able to come be in a place of good conversation with them would be good.
Mm-hmm. Which leads us to step three, which is to examine your heart honestly. So if somebody comes to you and says, you did this, or I don't like this, or I feel this way because you said something and I'm hurt. If you take that time to consider and to just take a step back, don't defend, use that time to examine yourself and ask yourself, is this troubling because I actually did hurt or sin against this person. Maybe I did it unintentionally. This step says, listen to and consider their claim against you, regardless of whether it was intentional or unintentional. Try to put yourself in their shoes. See the offense from the other side. So it may be that you actually did do something that was offensive or hurtful, and that you do need to apologize, or you do need to make repair or something along those lines. Again, that's not a fun position to be in. But if you take the time to allow God to speak to you, I think it's so important, because if you go to someone that you have hurt and you actually are sorry and you actually have heard them, there is so much opportunity there for repair. And that's what we're going for. We're not trying to defend. We're trying to repair. And that takes both sides willing to do that, but also the one who has possibly been offensive. So not a fun place to be, but that time is really important for God to speak to you, I think.
The next step is confess any realized sin, both to God and to the offended person. This is a very critical step in the process.
Yeah, because if you realize that you've hurt somebody, but you don't want to say it, or you don't want to admit it because it's painful to admit when you've been wrong, the reconciliation is not going to go very far.
Well, I think this one ties in so nicely with number three, examine your heart honestly, because oftentimes when somebody comes to us offended, especially coming from somebody like me who I offend a lot of people just by nature of my personality. I don't mean to. I'm just very direct. And so I'll either say something and it could be offensive, or I might not say anything because I just want to protect your heart. But oftentimes I just want to fix something. And so I'm not as careful as I should be. I've gotten better over the years. But when you recognize that about yourself and somebody's coming to you and they're telling you that you've offended somebody, or I've had other people say, hey, that I think that offended that person. That's happened to me.
Like a third party.
A third party that was involved in the conversation and says, hey, Pam, I think you really offended that person. Then I'm like, okay. You can also get frustrated with yourself. So what can come across as defensiveness is really that you're like, shoot, I did it again. Like, I don't want to offend people, you know, but here I am, I'm doing it again. And I stick my foot in my mouth again. And so you've got that to get going. And then, you know, just being able to flip side of that, the good side of that is that you get really good at confessing your sin. And you get really good at apologizing for offending somebody. And if you can do that, if you can just know, like, I know this about myself. So I'm really good at apologizing. I apologize to my kids. I apologize to my husband. I apologize to people all of the time. And they kind of know that my intention is good most of the time. Like, I'm not intentionally trying to hurt anybody. And so people can really give you grace, especially if you are eager to confess again to God and to the offended person.
And I think it's important to remember, too, that those words, I'm sorry for blank, you know, whatever it was that you did, the words are actually really important. It's not just the actions that maybe you feel bad about what you did and you change your actions. That's great. But the words bring healing to the person who has been offended. And I think often that's the hardest thing to do. Look somebody in the eye and admit what you did and ask for forgiveness and be actually really sorry. It's not the same thing as me telling my kids, okay, say you're sorry to your sibling, you know, if they've hurt each other. But when we are convicted of our own sin and we go to the person with words and express that, there's some real healing power in that.
There's also healing power. Like when there is a third party that's coming to me and the person that I've offended doesn't even, maybe they're just sitting there being offended. They're not going to actually have the courage to come over to me and say, hey, you've offended me again, Pam, you know, then I can actually act on that right away. And I will call that person up and say, what did I say something that offended you? If I did, I didn't mean to, you know, or whatever. And oftentimes, like you said, Molly, the words are really important because what comes out of it is maybe some vulnerability on both sides. I've offended people before because I was hurt about something. And then once that came out, then she was able to give me grace more because I was coming from a hurt place initially. And then I was causing damage to her. And then I realized, oh, my hurt over here is causing me to be offensive on that side. So it was healing for the both of us in that instance.
Mm-hmm. You know, some of us come from families of origin where we never apologized or admitted wrong to anybody. And that was definitely how I was raised. And so I think that that's not uncommon. I think that learning to actually speak your regret and ask for forgiveness is a huge thing. And not just saying, I'm sorry, but I'm sorry for what I did. Will you please forgive me? Because that's the next step in repairing that relationship. Which brings us to step five, really, which is commit in person to not doing whatever it was that offended them, if at all possible. Hopefully, the humility required to ask forgiveness will show the offended party your sincerity of heart and the process of restoration will begin. So that's what our goal is restoration and reconciliation. We don't just want to get past and put things behind us and leave a wound there still, because that's pretty easy to do also, right? Just ignore it and hopefully it'll go away. But no, we want to expose it, heal it, and restore. And that takes some hard work between people. So
it does take hard work, but I would say that community and friendships are worth the investment to do the hard thing.
I agree. And I would hope that the people in your community recognize that they signed up to come to community to do it, to put that hard work in, to have the courage to be able to have these conversations, because these conversations are really scary. And it means having to be vulnerable, which can be really scary for people. Mm-hmm. It's scary to share something. The reason why you were offended was because it reminded you of this. And then you share something with that. But until you have some level of vulnerability, you will only have surface level relationships. And you'll have a tendency to judge one another based on your behaviors and not on what's going on in somebody's life, because you just don't know.
So I think I was just going to say, a conflict policy in a lot of ways is a preparation for deeper relationships. It's a challenge to walk through these things. But that's what we're challenging you as leaders to do, is to be this person who follows Christ's actions as closely as possible, to be the person that is going to be an example and lead the way down this path, because it's not an easy path. Nobody can say it's an easy path. It's easier just to throw in your towel and go find another friend, right? Like, just be offended or just be defensive. That's easier, but that's not what God has called us to. And it is, it's worth it. And you'll see when you have conflict in your community and you are able to handle it well, how much it brings people together. It really does.
So this process does take some time. So remember that conflict does not have a quick fix. Take the time that is necessary to do it well, and you'll gain yourself true friends and build deeper community.
Mm-hmm.
Do it impulsively and without deliberation, and you will likely lose friends and possibly community. And I would also caution against agreeing to disagree on a lot of issues. That's the easy way out. And it puts a weight on a friendship and in community that is hard to work past.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't allow you to actually, when you're resolving conflict, what that really means is bringing it to the light. It's bringing out to the light in front of God those scary, hard things that you've been through that has caused you to have a reaction in this situation, right? Or to clear up information or something like that. But when you keep and hide all of those things to yourself, that's the enemy's playground. Mm-hmm. Right there, because then he gets to tell you all of these things about yourself and about that other person and make all of these judgments. But when you bring it out into the light and you put it and you do the precepts that God commands you, so it's not even what you should do. God tells us to do this. It's a command. And the reason why is because he loves us. And he knows that on the other side of that is blessing, is a deeper relationship, is walking in the spirit because we're obeying him and having that love and joy and peace and, you know, compassion and all of those things that he offers us when we obey him and do what he tells us to do.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy wants to keep us scared. He wants to keep us from each other. He wants to keep you isolated. So if you are going through a conflict right now, I just want to encourage you. I want to give you this tool. I have a tool that I use whenever I have to talk to somebody about something hard. And even if the person knows this tactic, it will still help you bring the walls down so that you can have open communication. Because, right, just like what Hannah said, sometimes it's a surprise. Mm-hmm. And it's the surprise that catches you off guard. And then suddenly you're like, do I need to be defensive here? So this kind of helps you have a conversation and it not be a surprise. So whenever I have to talk to somebody about something hard, I will go tell them, I need to talk to you about something, but I'm afraid of, and then I will just list my fears out. I need to talk to you about something. And oftentimes I'll say, but I'm afraid I'm going to be offensive, or I'm afraid that I'm not going to be mm-hmm. able to say this right. Or I'm afraid that, you're going to take it wrong, whatever your fear is. Your true mm-hmm. and honest fear, you just lay it out. One, it gives them an opportunity to know, hey, she's coming to me with something and I got to get ready for it. Two, you're not just saying, hey, this happened, and you're not just like surprising them with it.
Mm-hmm.
And three, it gives them an opportunity to agree to not do those things. If I come to you and I say, I'm afraid that I'm going to hurt you by saying this, then they will say, no, just, you know, say it. They're like agreeing, I'm going to make sure that I don't get hurt, and I'm going to listen to you. And so all the walls come down, and it's just such a great way. I do this with my husband all the time.
Yeah.
He might chuckle and laugh because he's like, uh-oh, we're going to talk about something. But it just creates that, like, side by side, we're together, not face to face. We're going to confront each other. We're going to work on the problem together. We're going to put the problem in front of us, mm-hmm. and we're going to solve it together. And you're not the problem. There's one thing. I have a question for you guys. Just in general, with the whole conflict policy, how does that work in classroom management? So if you are a teacher in a class and you've got a kid that's being disrespectful or whatever, something disrupting class in some sort of way, and you have to correct them, how does this work with that? Let's say you correct them and then they tell their parent and their parent's upset now and there's this conflict now. Do you just go through this thing?
I think, first of all, you have a behavior policy. Also, you have a procedure for behavior problems in class. And so if, like, for example, our behavior procedure is the student is corrected once, no big deal in class, right? The student is corrected twice and they're given a warning that they will need to be the either leave class or have their parent come and sit with them if the behavior continues. And if it happens a third time, then you have to take action right then. And the behavior policy is not there to punish a kid. The behavior policy is there to create an atmosphere in class that everybody can participate in. And it just to give that student, maybe they're having a really terrible day. Maybe something happened at home that we don't know about. Maybe they, you know, like Hannah, you talked about, they're hungry or tired or one of these things that makes them behave badly. Let's give that student an opportunity to take a step out of class, and maybe they can't return that day. But it's allowing them to own their behavior. It's not about retribution for bad behavior in class. So again, it's part of kind of the whole philosophy of how to deal with conflict, that you continue to think the best of that other person. You continue mm-hmm. to try to love them as best you can in spite of their weaknesses. Like, we all have them, right? So yeah. If a
sounds like we need to do a episode on classroom management and a behavior policy.
For sure. It's important to have.
Mm-hmm. It is important to have, but it's good to know that there is a difference between these types of conflicts and a conflict you might have in managing your class.
Yeah. I think our conflict policy has really been applied to conflicts between parents as opposed to a conflict between children or between an adult and a student. Because mm-hmm. if there is a conflict between an adult and a student, really you have to involve the parent of that student. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can have this procedure between an adult and a student. Mm-hmm. It's not really appropriate. Yeah.
It seems to me usually, though, that if there is an issue between a parent and a student, the conflict ends up being between the two parents.
Absolutely.
It does. Yes.
And that's often the source of the conflict, right? Because we mm-hmm. like to protect our children. We take their mm-hmm. side. And so in this procedure, it's important to remember that your fellow teacher or mentor or tutor is not trying to hurt your kid. They're not trying to attack your kid, even though it may be our first reaction to go, oh, somebody said that about my child or did this to my child and mm-hmm. I need to defend my child. Take a step back first. Put yourself in that teacher's shoes. What would you have done? You know, is there anything that the student needs to own? And maybe the other adult is totally out of line. That is possible, right? But you don't know that until you have taken a minute to decide and to, and actually more than a minute, right? Take a day to actually examine the whole situation and think about all these things that we talked about in this conflict policy. Don't jump to conclusions. So yeah,
that's where the policy kind comes in to play is mm-hmm. is when you get into those situations. Thank yeah. you guys.
Well, and
for
I would say
that.
Well, sorry to interrupt, Pam. I would encourage our listeners to see conflict. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a huge big deal. If we can address things before the molehill grows into a mountain, then it's much easier to tackle conflict than when it's swept under the rug or there's repeated offenses because they weren't dealt with when it happened the first time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think we think we're giving grace, but really we're kind of stacking up the offenses. And then we have a big problem. Whereas if we had addressed it when it was a small thing or not a big deal, then it's so much easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Because there's not hurt upon hurt.
Yep. Yeah. When you stack up those offenses, eventually you're going to cash them out on somebody. And it's either going to be that person, your husband, your kids. It's not going to be pretty. So drum up deep down inside of your body the courage that it takes to do it.
Yeah.
And beautiful things can happen from that. I mean, when we really come with vulnerability, because this is character building. As for adults, we need character building, and we should expect opportunities that God is going to give us to refine our character. So the goal is not to avoid all conflict.
Yeah.
The goal is to handle conflict with truth, love, and grace.
Amen.
And that's really important.
Well said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I just end with a verse? 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins.
Don't forget that word earnestly.
Mm-hmm.
It takes effort. It takes effort to love. It's not easy to do this, but it's worth it.
It's worth it.
Thanks, you guys.
That's right.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, applicable, or encouraging in any way, the best way to thank us is to share it with someone who might benefit and to write a review. Here's how to do it from Apple Podcasts. Right now, exit the show you're currently in, then select the library icon on the bottom of the screen. Then select Shows. From there, click on the She Leads by Faith podcast thumbnail. Scroll down until you see Ratings and Review, then click on Write a Review, which is just below. Tell us what you think. We would love to hear how it helped.